Hello everyone, welcome to another episode of J-Talk Extra Time. I think this is the second period for this week, although I could be wrong. It has been a long, compressed season. I'm John Steele. Joining me as always is Stuart Smith. Stu, how are you doing?
Yeah, good, thanks. We might be in three-period territory this week, possibly.
It's chaotic, it's, but we wouldn't have it any other way.
It's the new normal, apparently.
Okay, speaking of new normal, Stu, before we get to the J2 action, which is what we're going to focus on in this segment of the pod, on a J2 tip, there have been some managerial changes afoot this week. So do you want to run us through the main ones quickly?
Sure thing. So there's been quite a few managerial changes and appointments in this week. I think probably the most high-profile ones are Cho Ki-jae, the ex-Shonan Belmari manager. He's been appointed manager of Kyoto Sanga for next year. He's looking to rehab his, maybe his off-field reputation, because his on-field reputation is pretty stellar in getting Shonan Belmari up and into J1 more than a few times. So yeah, he's in charge at Kyoto next year. Takuya Takagi was officially binned from Omiya Ardija this week. The word on the street is that ex-Omiya player Ken Iwase will be taking over. Iwase is currently on the backroom staff at Oita Trinita. A couple of managers staying. Kenji Aruma at Fajiano Wakayama has kept his job despite a very kind of disappointing season for his team. And Kiyotaka Ishimaru, the first-year coach of Monterio Yamagata, who started off pretty roughly, but his team came on strong in the second half of the season, and I think he's fully warranted another season at the helm of Monterio Yamagata. They could be dark horses for promotion next year. Renault for Yamaguchi have parted ways with Masahiro Shimoda. That's kind of a surprise. I mean, Renault are a bottom of the table, but Shimoda has an excellent reputation as a coach that develops players, and he won't be out of a job for too long. The rumour mill around that job is quite interesting, John. I don't know if you've heard, but one of the main people linked to the job is ex-Magalta Sendai manager Susumu Watanabe, which seems a little bit of a left-field choice. I'm not really sure how that will end up working out down there. I think that's as far as the job news goes, unless I've missed anything out.
I think the only one I'd add, I think Kanazawa's manager is renewed for next season.
I saw that
a few minutes earlier.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, Ehime. Yeah, we missed out Ehime. Ehime have parted ways, or will part ways, with their manager Kenta Kawai. Again, I don't know what Ehime expect, really. In the same way, I don't know what Renault for Yamaguchi expect from their kind of cycles of developing players and letting them go. Ehime and Renault for, I think they're the bottom two sides, just off the top of my head. But yeah, so plenty of job openings in J2, and my gut feeling is that there's more to come.
Might be time to dust off our resumes, you know, Stu. A dream team.
Absolutely. I'd settle for an assistant position to start off with, though. Someone else take the blame.
Someone that sounds like me, put my hand up. Yeah, I'd like to stand in the technical area and just point. That seems like a good use of my time, to be honest. Thanks for the roundup, Stu. We should say we're planning on, or I haven't discussed this with you, but I think we'll do during the close season at least one or two proper kind of in and out pods, like with all the managerial changes, the player changes. At the moment it's tricky because there's a small matter of the business end of the season being upon us, so it's quite hard to keep track of all the actual football as well as the off pitch maneuvers. So with that in mind, we better get back to the action. So last weekend, J2 round 39 took place, so we're into the final stretch, just three games to go. the leaders, Tokushima, could have sealed promotion, couldn't they, if they'd won their game away at Mito, but they ended up losing 1-0. Tokushima did nearly take the lead in the fifth minute when Takeru Kishimoto hit the post. After that, Mito really took the game to their opponents. Kota Yamada had a good chance to put them in front, but shot wide. Masato Nakayama also went close with his backheeled effort at the near post. Mito did go ahead just after the hour, the 62nd minute, thanks to Yuto Hiratsuka's well-flighted free kick. I know you're a goalkeeping expert, Stu. I thought this was bad goalkeeping from Naoto Kami Fukumoto, but what do you think?
I think he lost the ball in the sun. That's what I think, because it looked weird when I saw it. And I thought, how's that gone in? Because he's obviously got two hands to it. But I think it looks, when you look at the view from behind the goal, looking towards where the free kick was taken from, that's where the sun was coming from. And I'm almost certain he lost it in the sun.
Goalkeepers don't seem to wear caps nowadays. Is it not allowed?
Well, no, I was just about to say that. Like, I have seen it this year in the J-League. I can't remember who did it. But no, they're allowed to wear caps.
I just thought it looked like poor preparation not to have a cap. Like, you know, I'm getting old. Back in my day, keepers would have a kind of glove bag, and I assume there'd be a cap in there. They could, you know, whip out in such an eventuality. But yeah, it was a weird one. But yeah, I guess we'll give Hiratsuka credit for a well-flighted free kick. But I don't think Kami Fukumoto will be very happy with the fact that it ended up in the back of the net. Now, Tokushima had a golden chance to equalise midway through the second half, Stu. This is when Boniface Nduka felled Yuki Kakita inside the penalty area, but Kakita's penalty was saved brilliantly by Ayumi Niekawa in the Mito goal. Tokushima threw everything at Mito in the closing stages, and they did nearly equalise when Niekawa saved Takuma Suzuki's shot, and the rebound fell to Atsushi Kawata, and he hit the post from probably about 2 yards out. It was unfortunate to see the ball coming back off the frame from a Tokushima point of view. So Tokushima go down to a 1-0 defeat at Mito, still needing 3 points from the last three games to clinch promotion, you know, by their own hand. They're going to do it, aren't they, Stu? They don't need to panic.
No, they don't need to panic.
Okay, we might be talking more about Tokushima's promotion very shortly in the midweek round, mightn't we? So, second placed Fukuoka had to come from behind to rescue a point at home in a ding dong battle against Kanazawa. This game finished 2-2. Kanazawa 1-0 up at the break thanks to a goal from Kyohei Sugiura, who converted a cross from Taiki Watanabe. And yes, Kanazawa doubled their lead 4 minutes into the second half. Ryoga Ishio heading home unmarked at the back post at a corner. And Fukuoka left it very late to mount an impressive comeback. In the 84th minute, Sultan Tanabe swept in a cross from Emil Salomonsson to make it 2-1. And just 3 minutes later, Fukuoka were level. It was a Daya Tono who shot straight at Kanazawa's goalkeeper Yuto Shirai. Somehow the ball ended up in the back of the net. I'm going to come back to you on that in a moment, Stu. There was even more late drama. Fukuoka's goalkeeper, Cervantes, made a world-class save, let's be honest, with his feet to keep out a shot from Mutsuki Kato in the sixth minute of stoppage time, even though only 5 minutes had been indicated. So a crazy finish to this game. Stu, what happened for that Fukuoka equaliser from Yuto Shirai, and what happened with Cervantes for that save at the other end?
Well, they seem polar opposites, right? I think for the Fukuoka goal, the commentators said that, or the analyst who was doing the game said that one of the defenders made the goalkeeper sort of blinded. So he couldn't really see where the ball was going until it was too late. And yeah, I looked at it, and there might be some of that, but like goalkeepers at that level should have the reactions to be able to deal with seeing things like, and you see things like in the warm-ups or when goalkeepers do training, they put like cones or just random things in front of goalkeepers so they have to be able to react to the ball being deflected or seeing the ball late or that kind of thing. So it looks bad. There may be a technical reason for it, but it's one of those where it should really have been saved, I think. Mm. At the other end, I mean, again, that's why goalkeepers do all these getting down on the floor and getting back up again and spreading themselves exactly for that situation. Like Cirante saved it with his foot, I think. It wasn't even his hand. I think he just stuck his stuck his leg out. It was a world class save. That's the definition of point saving. If Fukuoka get promoted by a point, that save will be the reason. It just will mm-hmm. be, because like they weren't coming back from that. They just weren't. This game and the Nagasaki game, I just want to like make an observation. Like they felt like end of season games where everything was on the line. There was an energy about them, and there was an energy from the crowd in both games. So both Fukuoka and Nagasaki, who we'll talk about in a minute, were both at home. The supporters were willing them on, and yeah, there was a definite kind of feeling of watching the game and looking at the games that these games mattered. And I think it was a good advert. Both games were good adverts for J2, and they were, yeah, those kind of games and those kind of atmospheres that you expect from games at the business end of the season. So that was good to see.
I tell you what, Stu, I don't know if you picked this up when you were watching the game or the highlights, but on the Tono goal, Fukuoka's equaliser, as he's carrying the ball forward, there's a roar from the crowd. And it's the first time this season, the first time the hairs on the back of my neck stood up watching the game. Because obviously we haven't had many fans in the stadium. When we have had fans in the stadium, they have to be quiet, or they have to be reserved. So yeah, that was great to see. And I agree. This was actually, the Fukuoka game was a really good, really good match. I think there were fewer goals, but just as much excitement probably in the Nagasaki game. So we'll come on to that one now. Late drama in this one. Third place Nagasaki needing an 86-minute winner from Kamen Togashi to beat Yamagata 1-0. I found this game absorbing on the highlights. No goals at half time, but early on in the second half, Yamagata's goalkeeper Eisuke Fujishima did brilliantly to palm a shot from Luan onto the post. At the other end, Vinicius Araujo, who, I'm trying to quietly bury the fact that I wrote him off earlier on in the season. He was excellent again, extremely dangerous, and clipped the top of the crossbar after a very uncharacteristic mistake from Seiya Maikuma, who passed the ball straight to him. It looked like it was going to be a 0-0 draw in this one, Stu, but Togashi was rather carelessly left unmarked, wasn't he, and about six-yard box, and he headed home Luan's corner for that winner with just 4 minutes left. The commentator on the highlights said that makes Togashi a top scorer for Nagasaki with seven, which is crazy if it's true, because he's another player who I often seem to end up picking on. So, maybe I should just shut up and pass it on to you, Stu. What did you make of this one?
Just piggybacking on the back of the Fukuoka game, the roar when that goal went in from Togashi, and the celebrations by Togashi and the players showed kind of what this game meant. It was horrendous marking. I mean, it was a decent corner, but it's on the edge of the 6 yard box, and there's no one within like a foot either side of in any direction of Togashi, and he just had to direct it into the net. Nagasaki needed it and they got it. I mean, they must have been aware of what was happening at the more or less the same time in Fukuoka. So they must have known that Fukuoka were 2-0 down, and then roughly simultaneously Nagasaki take the lead, but then Fukuoka bring it back to 2-2. So you can imagine the supporters, and they must know that kind of stuff on the bench as well. It was a game that they absolutely had to have, and they did have it, and basically that's what's going to happen for the rest of the season, right? Like Nagasaki just need to win out.
Well, let's talk about the run-in then, because that brings us on nicely to the 3 games left is the point where my brain can actually cope with all the fixtures that are available. Four games left is too many for me, but three is just right. So Tokushima, the leaders, they've now got back-to-back home games against Chiba and Omiya. You have to imagine they're going to win at least one of those games, but in case they don't, they visit Fukuoka on the final day, which has the potential to be interesting. Fukuoka themselves, they host Kyoto next, then go to Ehime before finishing with that home game against Tokushima. For Nagasaki, they're away at Verdy this weekend, Tokyo Verdy, but then they finish with back-to-back home games, Kofu at home, which could be tricky potentially, and then Kanazawa at home, which I think, I'm arguing against myself, Kanazawa just given a really good account of themselves away at Fukuoka, haven't they? Nagasaki will fancy their chances of winning that game. So, Stu, I think we've promoted Tokushima already a couple of times on the pod.
Yep.
We're assuming they get the job done. Only one of Fukuoka and Nagasaki can join them in J1. Who do you think it'll be? And who would you prefer, if that's not an unfair question? Because I can't pick between these teams.
Yeah, me neither. I think both games this weekend for Fukuoka and Nagasaki are very kind of banana skin ish. Kyoto, because you just never know what you're going to get with Kyoto, and even more so now that you don't know if they'll be putting an extra shift in for Sanayoshi, the coach who's leaving, or if they're looking to impress, or if they don't really care anymore. I think that's probably unfair to say they don't care anymore, but you know, they've got nothing to play for. They don't really need to impress the manager or those kind of things. So I don't know, but they've already beaten Fukuoka once this year, so they know they can do it. And any team that rocks up with Peter Utaka is going to be a difficult proposition to deal with. In the same way that Nagasaki travel to Verdy are pretty streaky. Like, again, they're a team where, like, you're never quite sure which Verdy is going to turn up. If Yuhei Sato is on in command of the game, it could be good, but they were pretty shit last week in the Tokyo Classic against Machida. They were really, really poor. You've got to think that Nagasaki know that they have to win, basically. And so I think Nagasaki will win, but I can't be that confident about Fukuoka, even though they're at home, because I think Kyoto are slightly more of a difficult proposition than their league position kind of indicates right now, I think.
I think that's good analysis. I'd go along with that. We should mention all of these kind of key games at the weekend. They're all taking place on Sunday.
Yes.
That's December 13th, and they're all at 2 p.m., aren't they? They're synchronized. So Tokushima against Jeff, Fukuoka against Kyoto, and Tokyo Verdy against Nagasaki, all kicking off at the same time at 2 p.m. So that should be a cracking couple of hours of a drama. Okay, Stu, we'll round up some of the other round 39 games from J2 over the weekend. There was a great win for Yamaguchi as they came back from a goal down to beat Kita Kyushu 4-1. Two goals each for Kazuma Takai and the Brazilian forward Yuri for Yamaguchi. Takai's first goal was a pretty bad mistake from Kita Kyushu's keeper Kengo Nagai, who gave the ball away under some pressure from Yuri. Takai scored again before Yuri made the game safe with a great lob over Nagai, who wasn't having the best of afternoons, it's fair to say. And as we've already mentioned, this was a little bit of a sign-off for the Yamaguchi coach Masahiro Shimoda, who's leaving at the end of the season. It's also probably the end of the road for Yuri, sadly, because it was announced on Yamaguchi's website he's already gone back to Brazil with a return date not yet decided. So that's never a good sign when players leave before the season's actually concluded. So we'll see if he's back or not. Matsumoto continued to look a bit more like their old selves for me in a 3-1 win at home to Niigata. Chong Tize scored a penalty for Niigata to cancel out Ryo Takahashi's opener, but Toyofumi Sakano rolled back the years, scored twice in 6 minutes early in the second half to win it for Matsumoto. Kofu lost 1-0 away at Jeff United. This was after a corner from Takayuki Funayama curled straight in at the far post with a touch from a defender. That was Chiba's winner in the second half. And the previously mentioned dangerous and unpredictable Kyoto won 1-0 away at Ehime. Peter Utaka did not score, but he set up Takumi Miyoshi, remember him, for the winner. Stu, did you pick out anything from these games in particular?
Yeah, I think Yuri, I hope he comes back. I don't think he'll be back with Yamaguchi, but I think that he's shown that given a decent supply line and a team that kind of works to his advantage, I think he could be a really good player in J2. It wouldn't surprise me to see him back in J2 next year. I'm just off the top of my head, swap him with Junior Barros at Corfu, and I can easily see that that situation unfolding.
I forgot to mention. Oh, sorry. Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh no. What were you going to say?
Oh, Yuri sort of made the first goal for Yamaguchi by pressuring the goalkeeper.
Yes.
Nagai, but his back heel for Takai's second was also very nicely done.
Yeah, he got booked for taking his shirt off as well, which you know, after he scored that lob, and I think everybody saw the funny side of it. Yeah, I mean, that's the signature of Shimoda, like real the goals obviously the first goal came from a goalkeeper mistake, but the other goals were really, really good. Really good football, really good interplay between players, and like I said, Shimoda won't be short of job offers because that's the kind of stuff he can do on a budget, and he can get that kind of stuff done. Quietly, Matsumoto have been one of the best teams in J2 second half of the year. Like, probably no one needs to talk about it right now because they were so bad in the first half that they could only become better, but they've done really well. For Corfu, it's never a good look to concede a goal straight from a corner. And then Kyoto, yeah, like we said, it's just like it. If it's not Utaka scoring, it's Utaka being involved in it. So he's such a key player for them. That's not breaking news, but it's something that the battle between him and Kamijima of the Fukuoka centre back and Douglas Groley as well will be a very, very interesting one to watch on Sunday.
Yeah, we should do the YouTube preview, you know, like pre-game talk with him. We talked it up pretty well so far. I would say on Yamaguchi before we move on, I think maybe Shimoda possibly is the victim of, I would say, maybe Tochigi and Mito having really, really unexpectedly good seasons and playing really good football. Because I think we have to remember that the people that run football clubs don't always understand football. And I think there's a tendency to say that, well, we're bottom, but there's teams with similar budgets to us who are, you know, eighth and 12th, you know, respectively. So therefore, our manager's not doing a great job. I'm on your side. I think Shimoda's done really well developing players. But it's something I want to talk about in another pod with regard to ISCC, about how I think when you're in the professional ranks, it's like for a lot of owners or front office people, it's kind of not enough to develop players. There's always that kind of balance of doing that whilst getting results. And it's something we can say for another time. But I think maybe it's just been a bad year for it's been a great year for Mito and Tochigi to name two, and probably Kita Kyushu you could add, coming straight up and doing so well. It's just put a little bit of extra pressure on the Ehimes and the Yamaguchis, in my opinion, in their managers certainly. All right, Stu, to wrap up last weekend's action then, there was a busy game for Ryukyu's Keigo Numata as his team drew 1-1 at home with Okayama. His handball resulted in a penalty for Okayama's opener, which was scored by Kota Ueda. But Numata then set up the equaliser for Ryukyu's rookie. I should have thought more about that before I tried to say it. Takuya Hitomi, who scored his first J-League goal. Iwata comfortably saw off Omiya 2-0 at home. Omiya's defending on both goals was pathetic. And, you talked earlier
more,
about...
Which team,
you were saying it's not fair to say that team doesn't care. I mean, if you ever wanted it, it's very hard to imagine that those guys were trying their best out there. And I wouldn't say they didn't want it at all, but they certainly didn't. Omiya's defenders didn't want it badly enough, I don't think. Terrible stuff. Talking of terrible, yeah, Machida Zelvia beat Tokyo Verdy 1-0 in another Tokyo Classic at Nozita, or Gion Stadium, Machida. Taiki Hirato was brought down by Verdy's goalkeeper, Mateus, for a penalty, which he converted himself midway through the second half. So good win for Machida, has to be said. There was a great game at Tochigi, in their tie against Gumi. Is this the Kita Kanto Derby, Stu? Have I got that right?
Yeah, it's one of the Kita Kanto Derbies.
One of them. All right. Okay. So this particular one finished 2-2. Genki Omae's free kick eluded everyone and crept in to give Gunma a half-time lead. But two absolutely brilliant goals turned the game Tochigi's way in the second half. Yudai Iwama, another name we've not talked about much this season, fired in a brilliant half volley from outside the box to equalise. And then young Ren Yamamoto arrowed in a left-footed shot to put the home side ahead. One of the best goals of the round. Masaki Miyasaka volleyed in a 90th minute equaliser from a knockdown from Ryohei Hayashi, so it finished 2-2. Pretty pulsating game, it has to be said. Last and least, I think there was a bonus midweek game for us, Stu. Not like we needed one, but on Wednesday afternoon, Kofu won 2-0 away at Ehime in their game that was postponed back in round 34, I think. Great lob from Dudu for Kofu's opener. And then, a horrible goalkeeping mistake from Taichi Kato for the second, which was scored by Riku Nakayama. In the end, only about 600 fans in the stadium for this game. That was a 1 p.m. kickoff on a Wednesday. So if you ever wonder why teams don't play games at 1 p.m. on Wednesday, this is probably why. And as we've already mentioned, Ehime's manager, Kenta Kawai, is off, isn't he? He's leaving at the end of the season. Stu, from that smorgasbord of games, what did you notice, or what do you want to mention?
It's not so much on these games, but some news that Yasuhito Endo, I think, will be at Jubilo again next year. I read on the wires today. He's gonna. I'm not too sure if I've understood it correctly, but I think he's going to sign a new contract with Gamba, but go out on loan to Jubilo again next year. Something I'm sure there's a valid reason for that kind of stuff, but I can't be asked figuring it out.
Is this like when English teachers declare themselves as a company and then get tax deductions on
something
their,
probably
know,
something
views.
Along those lines? So Yato will be back in J2 next year. I mean, that Omiya defending was I was gonna swear then, but I'm not. I'm just gonna say it was hideous. The Tokyo Classic really needs to think of a different name because there's nothing classic.
Tokyo Normal.
Tokyo
Standard.
Well, Tokyo Glocal Standard. Yeah, something along those lines. Because that wasn't a classic, but it was a much needed win for Machida. Tochigi, I mean, they've done really well. And I think probably they were the least fancied out of the Kita Kanto sides of Tochigi, Gunma and Mito this year. But they've given themselves a really, they've given a really good account of themselves. Two of the goal scorers in this game, Yudai Iwama and Masaki Miyasaka, won't be at their clubs next year because they've both been told that they'll be released. So, but not a bad way to go out if that's indeed how they go out. But I didn't actually see the Kofu Ehime game. There was a round of J3 games, so I didn't really kind of put that on my watch list.
Oh, the second goal is worth watching. Yeah, where the goalkeeper is given a horrible high back pass and then tries to control it. But of course, every single player in J2 is better than me. So let's not get into that. But there are some players that just can't really control a ball. A lot of goalkeepers, especially, just can't really use their feet, I think,
sure.
or they can't do it well enough. And yeah, this guy. What was his name? Poor old keeper,
Taichi
Kato.
Kato.
Yeah, he was given a horrible back pass, but was not able to deal with it. So yeah, that's worth checking out just for shits and giggles, really. But okay, Stu, I think we covered J2 in as much depth as any right-minded person can at this stage. So thanks for the analysis as ever. What are we going to do? We'll take a quick comfort break and then come back for J3. Is that okay?
I think that sounds really good, John. Yeah.
Okay. Let's pause for drinks and then we'll be back with some J3 midweek roundup in a moment. Okay, everyone, we're back and we're thoroughly refreshed. So we'll move on now and talk about the midweek round of J3 action, round 32. So only two games left to play. In a pretty whirlwind season, I think it's fair to say. Now, Stu, the three teams in the hunt for the second automatic promotion spot all picked up 1-0 wins on Wednesday, helpfully for us, leaving things pretty much as they were in the table, just with one fewer game to play. So two games left, and Nagano are still in second place. This is after a hard-fought 1-0 win at Gamba Osaka's under-23s. Naoki Sanda fired in the winner in the 40th minute after Takumi Mizutani had set him up. It's funny, it's almost exactly the same time as Sanda scored away at YSCC in the Sunday game. I think that was in the 42nd minute, so he's a regular, pretty regular at the moment. Gamba's youngsters gave a really good account of themselves. Dai Tsukamoto went close twice, but Nagano nearly had a second goal in the second half. Ibuki Yoshida hit the crossbar from a Mizutani free kick, so he almost had a second assist of the game as well. Sagamihara, still third. They won 1-0 at home against Numazu. The vital goal in this game came in the 20th minute when Romulo played in Ryuji Saito to score. I don't mean to kind of dog on Sagamihara again, but they rode their luck at times in this game. Naoki Sato rattled the woodwork for Numazu in the 40th minute. This was a pretty crazy kind of passage of play. Just after the ball had hit the woodwork, their defender, Sagamihara defender Milton, was a bit lucky not to give away a penalty. He jumped into Kazuki Somaya, the Numazu attacker, and sent him flying. I'm not sure if the referee didn't see it or thought that, you know, it was accidental or the ball wasn't in playing distance, but I thought I'd definitely seen penalties like that given before. Sagamihara's goalkeeper Victor needed to make some good saves in the second half, and even when he was beaten late on by a header from Yusuke Imamura, the post saved him and Sagamihara again. So now 17 games unbeaten for Sagamihara. I was a bit surprised to only see 681 fans though at the stadium for this game, and I mention that only because I'll move straight on to talk about Gifu. Stu, they had a great crowd of 2,700 plus inside Naganagawa for their match. They beat Hachinohe 1-0. Quite a nervy performance, in my opinion, as you'd probably expect, considering what's at stake. The winning goal came here, came almost exactly the same time as it did for Sagamihara, the 21st minute, and it was Shota Kawanishi volleying home from about 6 yards after Hachinohe had done a pretty poor job of dealing with a corner. Nice for Kawanishi to get that goal after he missed a penalty against Tottori in the previous game. I thought Gifu looked a bit jittery after that, Stu. They needed plenty of big saves from their goalkeeper, Park Song-soo, and your team does like to do things the hard way. Shohei Aihara came on in the 68th minute off the bench, but ended up getting two yellow cards and being sent off in stoppage time, so I assume he'll be missing for the big game that's coming up at the weekend away at Nagano. But four wins in five matches for Gifu, Stu. Things seem to be going as well as can be expected. What do you make of the top three at the moment? Before you answer, so we've got Nagano in second on 58 points, Sagamihara 1 point behind in third on 57, and Gifu fourth, 2 points further back than them on 55. So it's all to play for, I suppose. How are you feeling? What are you thinking?
Yeah, I think on Wednesday, none of the teams looked any good, to be quite frank. But then at this point, it doesn't really matter. Like, just the result is key. The result is everything. And yeah, Nagano didn't look up to much. Sagamihara rode their luck. Gifu rode their luck quite a lot. Park Song-soo, as you mentioned, made some really good saves. Yeah, it's just, I mean, for the neutrals watching, those results set up this weekend perfectly, because obviously we're going to come on to what's gonna eventuate this weekend. But Gifu, I mean, it was absolutely freezing on Wednesday night in Gifu, but there were, yeah, like you said, nearly 2,800 there, which is kind of, I've seen J2 games with on Sundays with less people than that in the stadium. The Sagamihara crowd, I wonder, that game was a 6 o'clock kickoff. Gifu's was 7 o'clock. And so I wonder if that hour difference makes any difference of people like finishing work or like commuting back or whatever. But yeah, you would think that they could have hit 1,000, but apparently not. So maybe the 6 o'clock kickoff is not not kind of suitable for Sagamihara. But yeah, we're it can't be set up any better than it is for this coming weekend, right?
Talking about let's talk about both sets of remaining games very briefly. So Nagano, they finished their slate of away games now, haven't they? So they're finishing with back-to-back home matches. They've got Gifu coming up this weekend, which is a huge one, and then they finish against Iwate at Nagano U Stadium. For Sagamihara, they've got Akita home and Imabari away. Now, I know they're 17 games unbeaten, but you have to imagine at some point in those two games that unbeaten record's going to come under some pressure. And for Gifu, it's Nagano away this weekend. There's no getting away from it. It's a huge game. And then I think, is it right? They're away at Gamba Osaka.
Yes, under that's 20 right.
Last game. So they finished with the home games. Perhaps that explains the big crowd to some extent as well on Wednesday's last home game of the season. But yeah, Sagamihara against Akita this Sunday, December 13th. Third against first. That's at 1 o'clock. And then yeah, Nagano and Gifu. El Clasico for this year, I suppose, to second against fourth. That's at 2 o'clock. Sagamihara against Akita. Akita's performance has not been that great since they crushed the league and the title. And Sagamihara also not overly impressive. Is this going to be 0-0? What's going to happen? Sagamihara against Akita.
I don't know. Newsflash. But I don't think Sagamihara will win both these games. I don't think they'll win against Akita and Imabari. That is something I'm willing to stick my neck out on. Now, whether they don't win against Akita or whether they don't win against Imabari, I'm not sure. But I think, like, Akita was, I mean, they were slightly embarrassed last week, I think, by Imabari. So I'd be on the side of them kind of putting in a good shift and a good performance, but Sagamihara need it and Akita don't is the headline from this game. And so I don't it's going to be a tough one for both teams, but I expect that Sagamihara, yeah, they need it, so I think they're going to kind of stand up and be counted in this game. It'll be an interesting game that I won't be watching. So like Gifu, I've heard some rumors, and these are just rumors by the way, that Gifu's traveling support might be bolstered a little bit by Matsumoto Yamaga fans.
Interesting.
Well, because apparently some people want to go to Nagano to support Hiroyuki Takasaki, obviously ex-Matsumoto Yamaga forward. played a key part in their rise up the leagues. Maybe a lot of them don't particularly want Nagano to come up as well. I think there'll be a fair portion of Gifu fans who are going. I think there'll be a pretty big crowd in this COVID season. It wouldn't surprise me if this was the largest crowd of the year in Nagano.
A draw is no good for Gifu in this
it's
game,
not,
is it?
No, because Nagano's goal difference is so much better. It's plus, I think they're 8 goals better off than Gifu. Ideally, Gifu are going to go there and win 4-0. That's the ideal scenario. And then they just have to take care of business in the final games. But, you know, Nagano basically, to finish above Gifu, they just need to win this game. And then they'll have to take what Sagamihara can throw at them as well. And so, I mean, the fact of the matter is...
You think
is,
from a Nagano... Oh, go on. I'm sorry. Go ahead. I was
going to say, just the fact of the matter is that it's only Nagano this weekend that can get promotion. If they win and Sagamihara don't, then they'll go up. More or less. They'll go up.
Yeah. If I'm Nagano, I'd almost be tempted to just not play for a draw. That's not what I'm saying, but I'd keep it very tight against Gifu and just assume that I'm going to beat Iwate in the last game. Maybe, I don't know. Certainly some permutations, but if they can get promotion, with a win potentially, then I think both teams are going to go for it, aren't they? It would probably be really exciting.
I just want to check that, actually. Game. I just want to check that they will, if they win and Sagamihara don't. So if Sagamihara draw... So if Nagano win and Sagamihara mm-hmm. don't, then that mm. will put...
Put Nagano
off. Yeah, they'll go up. Mm-hmm. Mm. So because their goal difference is so much better, yeah.
Sure. Are we thinking that Nagano are holding enough cards that it's probably going to be them
They're in the driver's seat. Mm. They are in the driver's seat. The only way that they're gonna do or they're gonna come unstuck is if Gifu get a couple of early goals against them, but then at the same time, Gifu know they need goals as well. It kind of doesn't mm-hmm. really matter if they get goals against Nagano or against Gamba. They just need goals. They need to overturn that goal difference. So, but definitely Nagano in the driver's seat.
Mm, it's going to be fascinating. I think if I'm being brutally honest, and I try to be wherever possible, I think Nagano are probably the second best team I've seen in J3 after obviously Akita.
Mm.
I think if we were talking about the first half of the season, I would have said Kumamoto. I think I've said it numerous times, but I think Nagano have just been consistently. I think they've been more impressive than Sagamihara, even though Sagamihara spent quite a few rounds in second place. It feels like so. We'll see that the team that has looked the most impressive doesn't always get the promotion place, does it? So we'll have to wait and see. But it's all set up for a grandstand afternoon. I shall be working, so I hope people who are not working can enjoy it to the max. Okay, Stu, time's against us as ever, so we'll wrap up the rest of the midweek games and some other talking points before we finish. There were only 8 goals in total in the 9 midweek games, weren't there? So I don't know whether that was tiredness or cold weather or just the J3 teams taking pity on us who try and keep track of all these goals and giving us a little bit of a break. But elsewhere, Imabari moved up to 5th place after beating Iwate 2-0 at home. A low strike from outside the box from Wataru Harada put Imabari on their way 10 minutes into the second half. His second goal in 2 games after he opened the scoring away to Akita in the previous round. Masamichi Hayashi wrapped things up with a late solo goal on a breakaway. Again, very similar to what he did in the win away at Akita in the previous game. It's also been announced that Imabari's coach is staying on for next season. I think he's had a contract renewal announced today, so it's going to be really interesting to see how they do in J3 next year. Fujieda won 1-0 at home against Fukushima. I thought we could call this the FU Derby. Stu, what do you think? I'm on brand there.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, anyway, the best goal of the round was in this game for me. Tsubasa Yoshihira scored an absolute thunder bastard from about 25 yards to win this game for Fujieda. Cracking goal. Worth checking out on the highlights. And yes, Fujieda's boss, Nobuhiro Ishizaki, it's been announced that he's leaving the club at the end of the season. So again, it'll be interesting to see where he goes and who comes in to replace him in the hot seat at Fujieda. Kagoshima won 1-0 away at YSCC, a result that moved them up to sixth in the table, something of a recovery after they wobbled good and proper earlier on in the season. Takuma Sonada headed a close-range winner on the hour mark for Kagoshima, his third goal in the last two games. I don't know if this was apparent from the highlights. I don't know if you watched the highlights, Stu. There was an absolutely stellar goalkeeping performance from Shogo Onishi, the Kagoshima goalkeeper in this game. He was just unbeatable. I know that Cervantes' J2 save was the save of the weekend, but in terms of an all-round performance, Onishi was just... He was like from a different game or a different planet even. He was just unbelievable. And Kumamoto won a match at last, 1-0 at home against Toyama. And who else to score but Kaito Taniguchi? He headed in, on the hour mark, his 17th goal of the season, which keeps him as a top scorer in the division. And probably he's probably going to get that crown, I think, at this rate. Two games were goalless. Praise the Lord. Tottori against Akita was 0-0. And at Saneki at home to Seretse Osaka's under-23s, also finishing goalless. Stu, obviously these games, in the grand scheme of things, not mattering that much, but in the interest of completeness, I've waded through them. Is there anything you wanted to mention news-wise or match-wise from the non-promotion contenders?
Not particularly, just kind of joining the dots on Fujieda boss, Ishizaki. I think he'll be in demand, actually. I think he's done a really good job over his tenure at Fujieda. It's only last year that he was manager of the year in J3, as Fujieda just finished outside the top two. I think he'll be in demand somewhere. Fujieda kind of haven't really hit the heights this year, so maybe a parting of ways is mutually beneficial. And then the rest of them, I mean, there's not much on the line for any of these teams. I wonder about Takeshi Oki, if he'll stay at Kumamoto, because I doubt that Kaito Taniguchi will stay there. He's too good, and he will have been attracting the attentions of clubs in J2, one would suspect, so maybe appreciate him while we can.
What do you think about Luis Plaganuma? I finally remembered his name, the Spanish coach being renewed at Imabari.
I think he's done a really good job. I think he's blended kind of the experience that was brought in. Probably I doubt he knew too much about Yuichi Komano or Hideo Hashimoto. My guess is that Takeshi Okada, the chief executive of the club, brought those players in. But he's managed them well. He's blended a team that is new to league football, but he's got some good players. That Masamichi Hayashi, he was good at Tottori last year, and he's been good at Imabari this year. I think it's positive, and I think that he's obviously had a bit of help from above, but he's more than warranted an extension. And I think that given that Akita and another team, probably Nagano, are moving up, and who's coming up from the JFL? Miyazaki and
I think it's just Miyazaki.
If it's just Miyazaki, then kind of you're thinking that, you know, next year there's going to be kind of a big Royal Rumble for these for these promotion spots. I think it's it it's good news for Imabari that he's staying on, because it gives him an extra kind of year of work experience, but like scouting and knowledge of the game in J3. So yeah, I think if I were Imabari, I'd be very positive about the future.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing which players come in to kind of supplement the squad now, because I think they have a very clearly defined way of playing, so they'll have targets in mind for who they want to bring in. And I wouldn't say money's no object, because I don't think that's true or even fair, but they certainly can pay good wages at J3 level, can't they? We'll see. It's going to be interesting. When you say they're having help from above, you mean from the front office, right? Not from Jesus.
Yes. Yeah. I meant help from Takeshi Okada. Yes.
And anyone writing angry emails, you can just press delete. Just keep. Okay, Stu, thanks for the analysis. It's good for us to get together. And I think it's a long time since we talked about J2 and J3 in the same sitting. That was very, very cathartic for me. Mm. I hope it comes across that way for the listeners as well. We'll wrap it up here. I think time has beaten us again. Thanks for your time, Stu. And I want to say thanks to the listeners as well. You know, if you download and listen, you're helping us out. We appreciate that. And if you back us on Patreon, financially as well, obviously we appreciate that, and we take that seriously, and we try and make sure we produce content of a timely and reasonably good quality as well for you to enjoy. And it's been a tight old season schedule wise, but I think we've Stu and I and Ben and Sam over on the Big Pod, we've done what we can to help everybody get through a pretty crazy year. I don't think I'd class us as key workers, Stu. I think we're probably not in that bracket. You know, we're not doing much really to contribute to the cause. But if you download or you stream the show and you enjoy it, thanks. We really appreciate that. So hope you enjoy this episode as well. Stu, any final thoughts before we depart?
No, I think it's going to be an epic Sunday in J2 and J3. So I would, wherever you are in the world, when it hits 2 o'clock Japan Standard Time, just make sure you're in front of your TV or your computer with a beer or three or maybe something stronger.
It's like 5 a.m. in the UK.
Yeah, well, just suck it up and because I think it's going to be a good afternoon.
I'm waiting for the first divorce settlement, which is like the podcast made me drink at 5 a.m. on Sundays. All right, thanks, Stu. Yeah, thanks for your time, man. I appreciate it. We had a good chinwag, good chat this time. All right, everyone, that's all for us. Extra time this week. Yeah, enjoy the football over the weekend. I think it's gonna be pretty epic by all accounts. And we'll be back in some form to review it with you next week. So enjoy the football, and we'll speak to you again soon. Bye for now.